Welcome to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Join us for a conversation about faith in everyday life, the trials, the tribulations, and the triumphs. Discussions about how faith matters to you and our community. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health, whose mission is to extend Christian ministry by caring for the whole person, body, mind, and spirit, and by working with others to improve health and quality of life in our communities. Now, here's your host, Ted Dotts.
Good afternoon and welcome to Faith Matters. My name is Clint Barrick, and I have the privilege this afternoon of sitting in the host chair and interviewing the man who normally sits in this chair. His name is Ted Dotts. Ted, welcome. Thank you for being with us this afternoon.
Thank you, Clint, and thanks to Station for your ministry.
Ted, I've had the privilege of knowing you for a very, very long time, both you and Betty, but perhaps a lot of our listeners may not have known you for quite some time. Tell us a little bit about Ted.
I moved to Lubbock in 1949, which let me go to Lubbock High School, and that was a great, good experience. So I'm a Lubbockite. By 1961, I decided, after being drafted in the Army and graduating from Texas Tech, to go to the seminary, become clergy. So I went to SMU to the seminary, and once there, that was such a life-changing event, I began to think of myself as a theologian. The word theologian itself means someone who offers explanations about reality, theology, God, what's real. So you offer these explanations. I think that's the way I think of myself, as a theologian.
What else have you done in the community of Lubbock? I mean, there are so many things. Just give us some of the highlights.
One of the best experiences, I was a pastor at St. John's United Methodist Church for 17 years. Then another great experience, Methodist Hospital then had me come on staff as the medical ethicist. So I had to complete medical ethical training, which I did at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. In a couple of summers, and that was a marvelous experience. And I retired, and after retirement, St. Mary and Methodist merged, and I was asked to come back as senior vice president for the Covenant Health System, and that was a marvelous experience. So those kinds of things I have done, and in between, often done lectures at the university and the different colleges or departments and schools.
Well, you've certainly made a huge mark on the Lubbock community, and we're very grateful that you've had the time to come and visit with us today.
Thank you.
Speaking of theologians, someone that looms huge in theology is the Danish theologian and philosopher Søren Kierkegaard. And I know that you have sort of a special relationship with Kierkegaard. Tell us, who was Kierkegaard?
Kierkegaard, as you say, was a Dane. He lived 1813 to 1855, so he only lived 42 years. But he was a marvel of a thinker, a genius of a thinker. I realized when I was in seminary that what seminary does is, seminary, the word itself means something like seed bed. And I did 3 years at first in seminary, and I realized the seminary put a lot of seeds in me. One of them was Søren Kierkegaard, just a little acquaintance with him. It was such a powerful seed, I went back for another year study at the seminary. Another seed I had was a German theologian named Karl Barth, lived 1886 to 1968, died the same day Thomas Merton did in 68. Karl Barth was probably the first major theologian that stood up against Adolf Hitler. And for that, he escaped concentration camp. That was before the Nazis began automatically to kill people like Barth. They just showed up one night, carted up his wife, four kids, no belongings at all, put them on a train and pushed them off the train in Switzerland. Barth, in his writings, which I also study every day, like with Kierkegaard, once said that no one could be a theologian who had not gone to the school of Kierkegaard. I admired Barth so much that it threw me into the study of Kierkegaard, and remains today. I read both of those men every day and have for a number of years.
You mentioned that you study both of these. Obviously, they're enormously important to you. Kierkegaard, not only as a theologian, but also as sort of an existentialist philosopher, does that play a part as well?
Well, he's often given the title of the first existentialist or the father of existentialism. That's given him even by folks who say they're religious existentialists or God existentialists or atheist existentialists. So he gets that appellation as the existentialist. That term is maybe a difficult term, but an important one.
Who is Kierkegaard to you? Who is he as a mentor or someone that you study?
Well, he had a hard time defining himself. He often called himself a poet. He was a great writer, but just a superior thinker. But the main thing that I think about him is he nourishes me. The reason I read him every morning is for self-nourishment. He has this marvelous ability in the way he thinks, which is always a little different cast from the way I think or I think anyone else thinks, and it's so jolting, but it's nourishing. It's like going to a meal and somebody's prepared a feast for you of foods that you hadn't eaten before, but they're just delightful. You're surprised at the taste. A little bit about him, perhaps. His father was extremely important to him. His father, Michael Pedersen Kierkegaard, as a boy, lived far out reaches of Denmark on a very rural area, family extremely poor. His father would be a herder of animals and sent out in the cold. The father, when he was a little boy, sent out there, stood on a little hilltop one day, and he cursed God. His life was so miserable and awful, and the father carried that act within him, and it had great influence on the father that he had dared to curse God. But they had a distant relative in Copenhagen who owned a dry goods store, and he needed an apprentice worker, and so they had this boy, Michael Pedersen Kierkegaard, come to Copenhagen and enter the business of the distant relative. But Michael Pedersen Kierkegaard was a brilliant man in business. By the time he was 40, he had taken over that business and made so much money that he retired at age 40. He lived to about 83, and he spent the rest of his life, an uneducated man, making friends with the leading scholars, especially the clergy, the bishops, and having them in for conversations. And he was a human being that was a great mind, although it was untrained and uneducated, but it was a really great mind. That made a great impact on his youngest son, who was Soren. He had 7 children. All of the others of them died, except for the older brother, Peter, who himself became a bishop in the Danish church. The other huge influence, it's called an earthquake in Kierkegaard's writing. The other thing Michael Pedersen may have done, no one knows for sure what the earthquake was. It may have been the cursing of God when he was a boy. But the other thing is his first wife died, and he had a servant woman in the house, not uncommon. The probability is that he may have raped her, and she became the mother of the 7 children. So you had these 2 huge possible wounds in the family, an uneducated but brilliant father, afraid of himself for cursing God, maybe inappropriate with his second wife. He had 7 children. 5 of them die at different periods. And so the impact of all that was always upon Søren. He had to think about those things and make response to them.
We're going to take just a short break and hear more about Søren Kierkegaard, the great Danish theologian. Our guest today is the usual host of this program, Ted Dotz. I'm Clint Barrick. Thanks for tuning in to Faith Matters on FM 89.1.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with your host, Ted Dotz. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health, celebrating Covenant Heart and Vascular Institute. Since 1965, Covenant has brought together cardiac physicians, nurses, and professionals whose sacred mission is compassionate care for every patient. More information is available on cardiac care at 866-4-COVENANT. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Now again, your host, Ted Dotz.
I'm Clint Barrick, host for this particular episode of Faith Matters, and our guest today is the person who usually sits in this chair, Ted Dotz. Ted, it's great to have you this afternoon.
Thank you
for coming in. We've been talking about the influence of the Danish philosopher and theologian Søren Kierkegaard on you And you've done a lot of research into the life of Kierkegaard. And you were telling us in the previous segment a little bit about his early years and about his family. Please continue from where you were.
I think one thing that might be helpful, understanding something about the family, you wonder how a person is able to come through that and be such a brilliant genius and make such grand offerings. So I wonder, what do I get from Kierkegaard? I read him every day. One of the first things I got from him was his indirect method. He, at first in his early life, realized that if you go directly to people and confront them, say, he always noticed the huge gap, for example, between what the church said and what it did. But he realized if you go directly and accuse or lift that up, that you only solidify somebody's position. So in his early writings, he did a lot of pseudonymous works. He wrote in other people's names, and he got famous that way, and his books sold. But it was an indirect method. That is, he would show you how somebody would turn out if they took this path. And so indirectly, you would learn, if I stay on this path, here's how I'm liable to turn out. And that indirect method for me as a clergy that preached every Sunday was simply superbly helpful. I could then confront bigotry, live through a lot of the civil rights, and with Kierkegaard's help, to be indirect rather than direct, I think moved things along better than confrontation. Another thing that I get from Kierkegaard is the extreme difficulty it requires of me to read him. He is very difficult for me to read. Other people may not find that, but it's a slow, almost torturous process sometimes. There's a book with 99 prayers of his in it. I try to pray those prayers until I can finally put them in my own words. And often on 30 or 40 days, I do one prayer morning on the same prayer before I can finally get the thought into Ted's language. Another thing he does is he does some sermons. He refused to call them sermons because he refused ordination in the Danish church. So he calls them discourses, Christian discourses. And that's where when people ask me where to start with Kierkegaard, I say, oh, please start with the discourses. They're sermons, many of them very short. There he takes scripture, and at the deepest, finest level, he helps people move from a literal reading of scripture into a moral, that is, what does it begin to tell you how to live and do? But then he takes you into the imaginative, which is another level of reading scripture. What imagination does this stimulate? I mean, we're all co-creators in a way with God. And by the time Kierkegaard works on a text, pretty soon you're into imagining, you're into creating. And then he gets to a kind of fourth stage, which is just a blissful stage. You get into the mystery of it. There is something so deep and wonderful about life that all you can do is draw near to it, appreciate it, give thanks for it, but you'll never get it exactly in words. And he has that way of taking you into the mystery. So I got that from him. Another thing I got from him was he loved Socrates. In fact, he wrote what we'd call a PhD dissertation on Socrates, the concept of irony. That is, you want to catch us saying what we don't mean. We human beings do that. And Kierkegaard has this wonderful way, like Socrates, if you stay with him very long, pretty soon you're caught. I said this, but I don't really mean this. Here's what I mean. He has an ability to take me into that. For that, I'm often jolted in the mornings, but happily so most mornings when I can understand it. One other thing he's done that's been especially helpful, he's taught me considerable about death. As you see, he died as a young man. He had a pitiful kind of end, but a most gracious end. He was in the hospital about 3 to 4 weeks, suffering every day, but nurses, physicians who took care of him, they all remarked on his immense graciousness, even in the midst of his suffering. He would argue, I believe, that death is not a thing to fear. It gives life meaning. And for me, the way that comes out, when I think about death, I think, number one, thanks to him, that death releases us from all our idols. That is, we tend to build things up in our lives that will save us, money, prestige, power, what have you. But death says, no, the only thing that saves you is God. But then death does a second thing, if I follow him correctly. Death ushers us into a new life. We're taken into a new life. new possibilities. And the third thing it does, and this one may be the most important, death entrusts us to create something with this new life. So from Kierkegaard, you get the sense death is nothing to fear. It's going to release us from stuff that's false. It will usher us into a new life. And then it's like God will sit back and say, now, you're a creator. So what are you going to do with this new life? So he's got a freshness about it.
Is that part of the existential part of his philosophy?
Sure.
Was the creation, human creation?
That's right. I would put that where you get the existentialism. At least that's the way I would read it and conclude about it.
Did Kierkegaard, given these philosophies and the fact that he denied ordination, did he have a relationship with the Danish church? A healthy one?
Yes. You remember, the Danish church is an established church. That is, the taxes pay for the buildings, the taxes pay for the clergy, they're civil servants. There were about 1,000 Danish clergy in his time, and he seldom ever missed a worship. In fact, I doubt he missed, and he could go to 2 or 3 in Copenhagen, had different churches, different times. So he was always there, and sometimes he would be asked to preach, which he would call a discourse, and sometimes he would. But Kierkegaard kept up his constant notice of this huge gap between what the church said and what it did. So he would say things like, you have clergy, they're well paid in the Danish system, and they get up and talk to us about caring for the poor, and then they go home to this mansion of a parsonage or manse and sit down to dinner with all the food to eat with their family, but they've just preached about helping the poor. Now, isn't there a huge gap here? Well, pretty soon he was not very popular among the clergy, as you can imagine.
Right.
And certain events came about in which he began to be persecuted in a kind of tabloid paper of the time, a severe, awful persecution. They made fun of how he looked and how he dressed and misquoted him. And the one thing he loved to do was to walk the streets of Copenhagen in the afternoons in between his studies and talk with the poor people, the shopkeepers, the people on the street, the urchins. He loved that, and they liked him. They'd gang around him, and you can see him walking down the street, and poor people and children. But as this tabloid Corsair paper began to poke fun at him, those people, the very ones he loved to talk with, began to treat him very shabbily, throw mud at him on the streets, make fun of him. Cartoons were done about him, so that it was 100 years after his death before people in Denmark would name anybody his first name, Søren. He was suffered that kind of pain. The more he suffered in rejection, it was like the better and stronger, more gifted he became. The suffering was horrible. He left us his journals, so we can read him every day almost what he suffered. But it was true. The worse things got, the more the best began to show up inside of him.
We're visiting with Ted Dotz, who is the person who normally sits in the host chair for this program of Faith Matters. I'm Clint Barrick. We'll be back for one more segment. Thanks for listening to FM 89.1.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with your host, Ted Dotz. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health, celebrating Covenant Heart and Vascular Institute. Since 1965, Covenant has brought together cardiac physicians, nurses, and professionals whose sacred mission is compassionate care for every patient. More information is available on cardiac care at 866-4-COVENANT. The views, opinions, and comments that are expressed on this program are solely those of the host and guest and do not necessarily reflect or represent the views and opinions of KTTZ-FM, Texas Tech Public Media, Texas Tech University, Texas Tech University System, or our faculty and staff, our affiliates, our partners, and our sponsors. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ-FM 89.1. Now again, your host, Ted Dotz.
Thanks for tuning into Faith Matters. I'm Clint Barrick. And we're visiting this afternoon with the person who is normally the host of this program, the Reverend Ted Dotz. Ted, thank you for being with us. We've been talking about you and your relationship with the great Danish philosopher and theologian Søren Kierkegaard. You mentioned earlier in the program that you spend time with Kierkegaard every morning, that you read his writings, that you probably spend some time in prayer. Tell us a little bit about Kierkegaard and prayer, specifically those two things.
Well, for me, one of the most striking things about Kierkegaard is his argument that he is not a Christian. He is only trying to be a Christian. And I find that extremely attractive. The danger of saying I am something then puts us into a position where we can say someone else is not. But the humility of that, I am not a Christian, but that's my one goal in life. By 1841, he had written in his journal that his one calling in life was to be a Christian, and that he would spend his life trying to do that. So when I read him in the mornings, it's like the two of us are trying our best to be what I think is my calling, and he said was his, that is to be a Christian. Not that I am one. I'm trying to be one. Now, one way he did that was with prayer. He wrote a good deal about prayer and left us a large number of prayers. All his discourses begin, end with prayers. His journal is full of them. Prayer for him means that you go and become very self-aware of your inner being. He will talk about the incarnation of God. God is incarnate. So to know the self is extremely important. And this is why he loved Socrates so much. Socrates went about trying to help people see what their real self was. They had a cultural kind of self where they believed what everybody told them to. But if Socrates worked with them long enough, they'd say, whoops, wait a minute, here's who I really am. I wasn't that. Prayer means first to become self-aware, to know thyself, as the Delphic oracle said, and Socrates reported. The second thing about prayer is that you discover the spiritual. Now, for me, and I think I get this from Kierkegaard, the spiritual is what gets us going and keeps us going in the full view of death. Spiritual, what gets us going, keeps us going in full view of death. That, in Kierkegaard's prayers, is a very powerful thing for me. For one, it takes away any fear of death. For two, it helps you be aware of God active in your life. What's got me going and what keeps me going? If I just say it's me and what I think and believe, I know that gets pretty shallow. But suppose something has hold of me that gets me going, keeps me going, even with death right there in front. A third thing about prayer for Kierkegaard was an act of faith. Often faith, and this is again often a problem among theologians, faith comes out as belief. If I have faith, then I believe 1, 2, 3. Now that's not Kierkegaard. Faith is a risk we take on God, who is making our lives better all the time. And he loved using this image of being out on the sea and you have 70,000 fathoms deep under you and you're swimming. That's faith. You're taking a risk to move on. Now, another thing in his prayer that is powerful is his dealing with despair. To be a human at all is often to have despair, to be crushed, to feel like you're ruined, that life is whimsical and capricious and you're helpless and you can't move. But Kierkegaard argues that our despair is a gift because it calls for a decision. It puts us in a position of making a decision. I see this often as a pastor. I'd work with people who are in despair, and it looked to me like they had three options. They could kill themselves, they could go insane, or they could make a decision. And I think that's from a gift from Kierkegaard, the decision part in the midst of despair. Another one is that he knew very well the scandal and the foolishness of the Christian gospel. The scandal and the foolishness of the Christian gospel is that God is always making things right. God is always making the wrong into right. Now that, for many people, is foolishness and scandal. Try to say that to parents whose child is dying of leukemia, to the people suffering under Boko Haram in Nigeria, any situation. If you say, here's what Christians say, God is always making the wrong into right, that seems like a scandal and foolishness, but Kierkegaard's prayers take us into the heart of that. And pretty soon, I think anybody that reads him will begin to say the same scandalous, foolish thing. In my life, no matter how bad it is, God is always making the wrong into right. The difficulties with prayer, Kierkegaard lays out, because prayer means we have to be open. We have to hear who we are. And that's what prayer does. It takes us to who we are. Now, the great difficulty with that is, as St. Augustine put it so well, who we are is arrogant, cheap, and self-deceptive. We are arrogant, cheap, and self-deceptive. Prayer is an opportunity for us to see where we are arrogant, cheap, and self-deceptive. Once we see it, then then we can will the one thing. He has a book that way, to will the one thing, and that is to detach from what is not God and simply to listen to God and be with God. So finally, for Søren Kierkegaard, to pray is to listen to God.
I'd like to go back for just a second to the faith. It was Kierkegaard who coined the phrase leap of faith. Is that right?
Yes, I think he gets credit for that.
Okay, right. The idea being that once you come to the end of what you can deduce logically and the unexplainable still exists, you then have to make a leap of faith.
Uh-huh. Take a risk.
Right. Take a risk, like on the ocean with the fathoms.
Leap of faith. Faith is a risk. It's not a set of beliefs. Set of beliefs follow from faith. I mean, once you take a risk, then you start listing beliefs that got you there, maybe. But faith itself is that awful, horrendous, frightening, dangerous moment. And when you take a risk, I know this life is as bad as it gets, but I'll take a risk. God is always making a wrong into right, and that's the way I will live. It's a huge risk. It is a huge leap.
Obviously, spending time with Kierkegaard and Karl Barth and these theologians is something that you do every day and that you start the day with. What are some of the other things that you want to do before your time is done?
As you know, my time is pretty well done. I'm terminal. I'm on hospice. And so my time is pretty well done. But that's a good question. I don't know anything more to do than what I am doing. Reading Kierkegaard every day, I still see people on a regular schedule. And we're always face to face with the very things Kierkegaard brings up. My life is in a terrible mess. Will I make a leap of faith with it? Do I have the gift of a faith? That's the other thing. Faith is not something we conjure up or make or devise. It's always a gift. Will I take a risk that I have the gift of God to make this step? Will I trust that Ted Dotts, who's dying, number one, death is not a bad thing, it's a gift. A pure gift. It'll release me from every false thing, usher me into a new life, and trust me to make something of it. That's a risk. So every day I get to take that risk.
Ted Dotts, great humanitarian, clergyman, and host of this program. Ted, thank you for the time you've spent with us today. This is Faith Matters here on FM 89.1.
You've been listening to Faith Matters with your host, Ted Dotts. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health, working to improve health and quality of life in our communities. Join us next Sunday for another edition of Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1, a service of Texas Tech Public Radio.